Science Fiction Anthologies. I hear it said now and then that the short story is a lost literary art form, that the magazines and various outlets that fostered the short story are dead and gone, that fiction today concentrates on the novel. That would be too bad if it were true. But of course it isn't entirely true. In the field of science fiction, at least, the short story absolutely flourishes, and the readers simply can't get enough of it. Indeed, any good science fiction story can count on periodic resurrection in the form of items in single-author collections and in multi-author anthologies. Some of my stories have been anthologized up to 30 times, and I by no means hold the record for such things. I suspect that both Ray Bradbury and Harlan Ellison, to name but two, could cite stories of their own that have seen far more repetitions than any of mine have. And there you have something that is oddly characteristic of science fiction, the vast number and varying nature of anthologies in the field. I have the impression that there is no precedent in literature for this. Why is it so? Why should science fiction, rather than some other subsection of popular literature, spawn an unending series of anthologies of enormous variety? I suspect that, in part at least, what is responsible is the unusual fervour of the devoted science fiction reader. Particular stories strike such a reader with the force of a sledgehammer. Combine this with the fact that magazine science fiction tends to be ephemeral. Few young readers save the magazines for long. Even if they start a collection, after a few years there comes college or marriage or other interests generally, and the collection falls apart, drifts away, vanishes. Yet the memory of those particularly good stories lingers, and a glow of glory builds around them. I have long lost count of the number of letters I have received from readers who tell me that once, when the world was young, they read a story about thus and so. They can't remember the title, the author, where it appeared, or anything more than thus and so. But could I tell them what the story was and how they could go about finding it again? Sometimes I remember the story from the small clues they present and can give them the missing information. More often, I cannot. You see, then, that anthologies offer a second chance. They sometimes bring back for readers stories once loved and then lost. Once I had deliberately devised an anthology, Before the Golden Age, Doubleday 1974, in order to present some stories that I myself had loved and lost. Sometimes such stories are better not found, for they don't, in actual fact, bear the prismatic colours that fond memory lends them. But sometimes they do. When I reread Tumithak of the Corridors during the preparation of my 1974 anthology, I found it to be a time machine that restored me to my teenage years for an hour or two. The first anthology of magazine science fiction appeared in 1943. It was The Pocketbook of Science Fiction, edited by Donald A. Walheim. Among the stories it contained were Stanley G. Weinbaum's A Martian Odyssey, which I had never read, having missed the issue in which it first appeared. I was able to enjoy it for the first time when I bought the anthology. And there is another service such books offer. They allow you to recover stories you never knew you had lost. In 1946, there appeared the first hardcover anthology of magazine science fiction, The Best of Science Fiction, edited by Groff Conkling. It was an anthology of almost painfully intense interest to me, but it was the first to contain a story of mine, Blind Alley. That was never one of my own favourites. In fact, I considered it then and now, too, as rather second-rate. Still, I discovered eventually that Groff's opinions of quality could usually be relied on, so perhaps I underestimate Blind Alley. In any case, Astounding, the magazine in which Blind Alley had originally appeared, retained all rights in those days, but John Campbell insisted that anthology income go to the authors involved. It was in this way that I made the great discovery that the same story could be paid for twice, and therefore, by extension, any number of times. It is only that which makes it possible for a science fiction writer to earn a living, so this was by no means a non-significant discovery. Later in that same year, the most successful science fiction anthology ever to appear was published. It was Adventures in Time and Space, edited by Raymond J. Healy and J. Francis McComas. It was a large, thick volume, with stories drawn almost entirely from the Golden Age of Astounding, and it contained my story, Nightfall. That was my introduction to the strange notion that one of my own stories was already considered a classic. The success of the Healy-McComas anthology opened the floodgates. I haven't the faintest idea how many anthologies have been published since, but I am quite certain that there isn't an issue of any science fiction magazine that hasn't been carefully picked over to see if any gems have remained undiscovered, nor any gem, or even semi-gem, that hasn't been discovered and rediscovered and re-rediscovered. Lately, I myself have joined the parade. I'm not entirely a novice at the anthologist's game, for I edited the Hugo Winners, Doubleday, 1962, along with successor volumes in 1971 and 1977, all of which were quite successful. However, I never let myself get too involved in such matters, because every anthology entails a great deal of tedious scut work, selection, obtaining of permissions, the making out of payments, and so on. The result was that, through 1978, I edited only 9 anthologies, which is very few for a person of my own wholesale proclivities, who considers nothing worth doing that isn't worth doing a lot. With my 9th anthology, however, 100 Great Science Fiction Short Stories, I made the marvellous discovery that my friend, Martin Harry Greenberg, tall, a little plump, intelligent, conscientious, hard-working, and good-humoured, found a peculiar, perverted pleasure in doing all those things, like getting permissions and taking care of payments, that I hated to do. Then the two of us discovered Charles G. War, also tall, hard-working, intelligent and conscientious, but less plump, and much more grave than either Martin or I. It turned out he knew every science fiction story ever published, remembered all the statistics and plots, and could put his hand on any of them instantly. Ask him for a story about extraterrestrials from Uranus, who reproduce by binary fission, and I imagine he would have 3 different sets of Xeroxes in your hand the next day. That changed everything. In 1979 and 1980, I helped edit no less than 12 anthologies, and at the moment of writing, there are 6 in press and more in preparation. Not all are with Martin and Charles. A couple are with Alice Lawrence, who has an attribute that the first two lack to an enormous degree, beauty. And one is with J.O. Jepson, to whom I am closely related by marriage. Very often these recent anthologies have had my name blown out of proportion on the covers for crass commercial reasons, and over my protests, since I contribute no more than my fair share. On the other hand, I contribute no less than my fair share either, and it chafes a little when someone takes it for granted that I am merely collecting money for the use of my name. I would overlook the slur on my integrity involved in this, since all great men suffer calumny. But I hate to lose credit for all the work I do. Charles Martin and I constantly consult each other by mail and phone, and we each dabble in every part of the work. But there is division of labour, too. Charles works particularly hard at locating stories and making photocopies. Martin works particularly hard at the business details. And as for me, well, all the stories descend on me, and I read them all and do the final judging. What I throw out is thrown out. I then write the introduction or the headnotes, or usually both. And since I'm the one who lives in New York, I tend to do the trotting round to various publishers when that is necessary. The net result is that each of the three of us does what he best likes to do, so that preparing the anthologies becomes fun for all of us. To be sure, I labour under the steady anxiety that something might happen to Martin or Charles, but under my shrewd questioning, both Sally Greenberg and Carol Lynn Waugh have made it clear that each entirely understands the importance of keeping her husband functioning, and I rely on them with all confidence.